Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
Yeah, we want to create some additional diversity in the EQIP and CSP programs to give that farmer a little bit more, options for their operation. Yeah, because we know that every farm is not considered equal or livestock operation.
Andy Levine, President and CEO of the American Seed Trade Association, on farm bill priorities.
How do you look at what is climate smart ag practices and how cover crops play a role in that? Because our members produce cover crop seeds. We look at a definition of our federal definition for biostimulants and how does that move forward. And then support for robust science and risk-based regulatory process for biotechnology and other plant breeding innovations.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Why is the transportation so important? It's because there's virtually nothing produced in agriculture or forest products in this country that cannot be sourced somewhere else in the world.
Peter Friedman, Executive Director, Agricultural Transport Coalition.
If we aren't able to deliver it affordably and dependably to our foreign customers, those foreign customers have other places to go. They will find substitutes, and in the past they have done so. And when they do so, it is very difficult for us, the U.S. agriculture, to get those markets back again. And there's plenty of stories in cotton and soybean and almonds and walnuts and so forth about lost foreign markets because our transportation did not facilitate the flow of affordable, dependable supply.
Talks about how policy can affect flows.
Federal and state policies can facilitate the flow of commerce, agriculture exports, or they can hinder it. And so I'd like to highlight a couple of those. Now, first, I want to go back to the Ocean Shipping Reform Act, because it's still very much in play. You all passed the legislation last year, but now the Federal Maritime Commission has to implement it. And those entities that were opposed to this legislation, fortunately unsuccessfully, overwhelmingly defeated, are now trying to undo some of those reforms at the Federal Maritime Commission as it goes through the rulemaking process. Fortunately, the Federal Maritime Commission has five commissioners, Republicans and Democrats, that are 100% aligned and on board with the interests of agriculture exports as well as importers, exporters, all the American interests. But still, the rulemaking process is sometimes provide some access for those who would oppose the legislation to achieve their goals down there. So we really do need this committee and this Congress to continue to monitor what goes on down there.
If others rely on ag, then who does ag rely on?
The ocean carriers, foreign ocean carriers, and there are only 10 of them in the world. We're dependent on 10 ocean carriers, all foreign companies, to get all our agriculture products out and the inputs that much of agriculture needs into the country. They have now invested millions of dollars, which they made over the last 2 years, in upgrading all their systems, and it's already provided some evidence. We've seen evidence of that improvement.
On truck weights.
Truck weights need to be increased. Members of this committee are introduced the Ship It Act, which increase truck weights to a level that's even closer to what Canada and Europe and all our trading partners do. We have the lowest truck weight limits in the world in some of our states, and in California it creates a barrier to agriculture exports. The lowest truck weight limits in the world, increasing congestion, increasing delay, and increasing emissions. It's almost an embarrassment when you talk to Canadians or any other country.
And there's a labor issue.
We need more truck drivers, and there's legislation and pilot projects underway to get more people. Young people, when they graduate from high school, maybe they want to go into truck driving. They can't now. This will facilitate that. We need more of that. We do need a resolution of the port longshore labor dispute and the contract negotiations on the West Coast. That's been going too long, and we're hopeful, and maybe oversight from this committee will help, because it's causing a shift in transportation services from the West Coast to the East and Gulf Coast. We do need inland rail depots, and really can use your help there, because agriculture needs more of those.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The American farmer is our true heroes.
At a Farm Bill listening session earlier this year, the chairman of the House Ag Committee, G.T. Thompson.
It's not just nutrition that they provide us, that we have access to, affordable, high-quality, and safe food. It's the jobs. It's a huge part of our economy, especially our rural economy, where we grow food and process it. And as I like to say, without a robust rural economy, people in all across America, starting with those who live in big cities, are going to wake up in the cold, dark, and hungry. And just the fact that American agriculture has increased in productivity 287% since the 1940s. There's no other place in the world that's done that. Now, we've slipped a little bit because you get headwinds with inflation. It impacts your productivity. But I'm working with a group of individuals here. Some are on the committee, but these are all Aggies. These are all ag supporters, whether they're on appropriations or other committees. And our commitment, my commitment, is we're going to put the right policies in place in this farm bill that we can take the productivity of American agriculture to 400% increase since by the year 2035. And we've got we have a great opportunity to be able to do that. These folks are also, because it's kind of the buzzword you hear a lot, our farmers have basically been criminalized. A lot of them run around and feel like they have a bullseye on their back that says climate criminal. And that's just a complete lie. And it's completely opposite. The data, the facts are on our side. The statistics are on our side. When you look at land-based solutions, which is basically agriculture, and yes, it does include all the crops, the livestock, and trees. The data shows that American agriculture sequesters 6.1 gigatons of carbon annually. Now, I'll be truthful with you. I still don't know how big a gigaton is, but it sounds huge, right? But it's big. But you put it in perspective, the data and the research, you find that we sequester 10.1% more greenhouse gases than what we emit on those lands. Nobody does it better anywhere in the world. And the research, one of the findings of the research, which just I find very exciting, and based on the mention of trade today and the importance of MAP and federal market, foreign market development, it was probably the number one thing that was named today. You'll love this statistic, this finding that says that if on this day, on February 14th, 2023, we wanted to reduce greenhouse gases around the world, the only surefire way to do that would be for American farmers, ranchers, and foresters to produce more and export it overseas, because you all are the climate heroes of the world. But it's a story that we have to tell, and I know that this committee is dedicated to doing that. I want to encourage you to, I did want to mention something briefly about those who are asking for more resources for things like conservation programs. This committee has already delivered on that. It's the kinds of stuff we do, unfortunately, where, while it's probably incredibly important to the American people, it doesn't really get covered by the mainstream media. At the end of the year, we had a bill signed into law that came out of the Agriculture Committee called the Sustains Act. It was mentioned once, I think, by Ducks Unlimited, which I appreciate. And what that does is creates a public-private partnership where organizations, businesses, companies, individuals of all sizes can make a contribution to USDA, and they can get their climate credentials if they do that. They can put it on their letter ad, put it in their advertising that they're green, sustainable, climate-friendly, whatever they want to do that to promote themselves marketing-wise. The most important part of that program is all those dollars go to fund more conservation programs for the American farmer. And so we accomplished that and a whole bunch of other things at the end of last year.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
This is a pivotal moment for American agriculture.
Speaking at USDA's 99th Annual Ag Outlook Forum earlier this year, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
I'm going to take you back, then I'm going to take you forward in my comments today. I say it's a pivotal moment. We've had a number of pivotal moments in agriculture. If you think about in 1862, in the midst of a civil war, the President of the United States decided there was a need for the country to have a Department of Agriculture, a need for us to have research being done so that our farmers and those who lived in rural communities could prosper. He understood and appreciated that a democracy required a food-secure nation. He understood the importance of research and making sure that farmers got information and knowledge. And so in addition to starting the department, he also had the vision of establishing our land-grant university system. and the extension opportunities that that created. Fast forward another 60, 70 years after the Civil War, we were in the midst of the Dust Bowl and the Depression. The Secretary of Agriculture, Henry Wallace, understood and appreciated the importance of investing in conservation, understood the need for farmers to have stable income, and so he established a supply management system that was in place for about 60 or 70 years following the Dust Bowl and Depression. And then Secretary Butts came along in the early 1970s and understood and appreciated that the world was going to need more food production. The population was going to grow. He wanted American agriculture to be at the front and center of an international effort to meet the food needs of a growing world population. And so we got rid of the supply management system of the New Deal. We focused on production. As he famously said, he wanted farmers to plan fence row to fence row. And farmers did. And the agricultural industry responded with extraordinary innovation and technology. In my lifetime, the productivity of American farmers has improved by 17 times. It's truly a remarkable story of innovation. So it makes sense that the topic of this particular outlook forum would be seeds of growth through innovation, a continuation of that tradition. Our productivity was unmatched. We became a food secure nation. We began to export to the rest of the world. And today, agriculture depends in a significant amount on those exports. And certainly appreciate the fact that the last couple of years we have set records in terms of exports. And again, expect another, as I think Seth probably indicated, a strong year for exports. But there was a consequence to that focus on productivity. The consequence was that it became more expensive to put a crop in the ground. And as farmers recognized that and appreciated that, they began the process of understanding that they had to spread that cost over a larger and larger base. And so we began to see farm sizes increase, which meant that we needed fewer farmers. And that impacted not just agriculture, but it impacted those small towns that depended on farmer population, customers for those small businesses in the downtown area, in the central business district, children going to school, a number of folks could support a hospital and a clinic. And we saw the impact and effect of fewer and fewer farmers on rural communities. And we also saw, as we focused on productivity and innovation, we also saw that we were beginning to lose some of the most precious resources we have in this country, which is our topsoil.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, it's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Most of the things they're calling for are already being done, have been done for years.
Steve Dittmer, Executive Vice President, Ag Freedom Foundation, on proposed legislation to reform checkoffs.
As far as audits and checkups and making sure that none of the money goes directly to finance organizations that are going to affect public policy legislation, that's all already being done. And of course, we pointed out Mike Lee and Rand Paul are two senators who normally are very committed free market guys, promote liberty and freedom, and what they're doing hanging out with the likes of Senator Elizabeth Warren or Cory Booker, I have no idea, because they are obviously very left-leaning liberal senators. Booker has put out a plan that would basically outlaw all confined animal feeding in the country, phase it out over a couple of years. I can't imagine. We think we've seen supply chain problems the last couple of years in agriculture, and especially in the beef industry. I can't imagine what we would go through if we no longer had any of the major feed yards. But that's the kind of thing that he's thinking about, and so I really don't understand why they're working together, and I don't understand why they're trying to quote unquote reform the checkoff. We went through this about a 2 or 3 year process with RKF suing USDA and the checkoff, starting in Montana and working its way through the courts. And the only major changes that were made is some of the checkups and checkoffs and auditing procedures that had been done for years were codified into some more regulations at USDA. And the courts ended up deciding that the checkoff was constitutional. It was being run properly. It wasn't a problem. It cost the NCBA, who has to do the legal stuff. This is a separation of powers. The checkoff is beef promotion, research, and education. They can't get involved in legislation. NCBA had to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars with lawyers fighting these court battles in order to prove the checkoff was doing what it was supposed to do. We also had a referendum or a petition for a referendum a couple of years ago, and it never got anywhere near enough signatures to bring a referendum. And I think one of the things that people miss about the beef checkoff, this isn't a government program that was handed down to us or mandated or anything like that. Cattlemen across the country went into their offices and voted this checkoff in 1985 or 86. I forget exactly which year. But it was something they voluntarily decided they wanted to do to promote their industry, to provide the nutrition research, the health research, to fight the don't eat animal products movement that started in the 70s with Senator McGovern. They wanted to be able to do this themselves, to do national advertising, to do educational work, and it's been immensely successful. And if you look at the money that the checkoff has put into the U.S. meat export operation, we're approaching $500 a head for the fed animal, a value from beef exports alone, besides the boost in domestic beef demand. And those kind of things are critically important.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I look forward to advocating for California agriculture, especially specialty crops.
At a Farm Bill listening session in his home state of California, Representative Salud Carbajal.
And I also look forward to making sure that our Farm Bill is one that benefits our farmers, ranchers, farm workers, and builds on our nutrition assistance programs, the SNAP program. I appreciate also hearing from the food banks that were here today in that regard. I have the distinction of being a son of a farm worker. I worked many a summers with my father in many farms, and I now represent a district that whose number one industry is agriculture. So I look forward to bridging all of those important interests, and I hear you loud and clear about water, infrastructure, and immigration reform. Last term, we worked on the Farm Workforce Modernization Act, which was a bipartisan bill. Unfortunately, it didn't make it over the finish line, but working on other committees, we hope to be able to move that forward as well.
Another California representative and former member of the House Ag Committee, Jimmy Panetta.
Thanks to all of you for being here and actually giving us the information that we need, the evidence that we need to make our arguments back in Washington, D.C. Look, I know that when you turn on the TV, you see a lot of yelling and screaming. And sure, you're going to have that because we're going to fight for our interests. But the fact is, for most of the time in Congress, you have members like you see up here who actually get along, who actually don't just point out our differences. We work to find our similarities. And everything that you said today provides us with that evidence upon which we can work together, find our similarities, and basically produce a nice farm bill coming up this year. I always realize that basically, you know, we are not the brain trust, especially, look, I know some of my colleagues may think they are, not up here, but some others actually think they know it all. We'll be the first to admit we don't. That's why listening to you is so important. Rick Antle, God rest his soul, Rick Antle once said to me, the best fertilizer is a farmer's shadow. You're on the ground. You see it, you feel it, you understand what you're going for. That's why what you're doing. That's why it's so important to have your word here today so that we can go back to Washington, D.C. and not just work together on the Ag Committee, on the Ways and Means Committee, but we can convince other members who don't have agriculture in their districts how important this Farm Bill is. Help them understand how important our agriculture is to the United States of America and to the world. And it's that ability to basically come together to work on research issues, which is important to me as a founder of the Ag Research Caucus, to work on trade issues, to work on crop insurance issues, to work on conservation issues, and yes, as the founder and co-chair of the FFA Caucus, it's important to have the young and beginning farm worker programs as well. That foundation allows us to get through our differences and reach a similarity when it comes to nutrition programs. And it should and it must provide us the foundation to ensure that we come up with proper immigration reform, especially to protect those who are willing to come here and do the work that no other Americans are willing to do, and that's work in our agriculture when it comes to our farm workers. And then, of course, to provide the infrastructure funding that's necessary for our farm workers, for our water resources, excuse me. Look, one of the proudest moments I can say that I had in Congress was actually coming together and passing the 2018 Farm Bill. One of the worst moments, though, was when that version of the Farm Bill in its first iteration was voted down out of the House of Representatives. So you need to realize that that can happen. That's why we need to come together in a bipartisan basis to make sure that Republicans and Democrats continue to listen to you, continue to learn from you, and that's why we're going to continue to work with you to get a 2023 Farm Bill.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Fast forward to the recent time.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack speaking at USDA's 99th Annual Ag Outlook Forum.
A set of challenges that agriculture faced. First, COVID and the impact it had on our overall economy. Then a year ago, Russia, without justification, unprovoked, invaded Ukraine and roiled the supply chain, causing increased input costs for farmers. And of course, we deal on a constant basis with the challenge of climate. Mega droughts, wildfires, fierce storms. What we learned from this experience challenges was that American agriculture was extraordinarily efficient and our food system was amazingly efficient, but it wasn't as resilient as we needed to be. We rebounded from all of these conflicts and challenges. And over the last 2 years, we've enjoyed record farm income. And I think CES report today suggests that maybe we won't set a record this year, but we'll have income that is better than the average, better than the historical average. In fact, the last couple of years have beat the historical average by as much as 50%. Record income. As I've said to many audiences, usually a Secretary of Agriculture, after saying that, would leave the stage, you all would applaud, and that would be the end of my comments. But here's the reality. The question is, who benefited from that record? We know that nearly 50% of our farmers over the course of the last several years, according to ERS, have had negative farm income. They didn't make money from their farming operation. We know that nearly another 40% of our farmers made money, but the majority of what they made for their family didn't come from farming. It came from off-farm income. So while we had record income, those large commercial-sized operations did very, very well. And they should, because they've invested a lot of time and energy in producing an extraordinary crop. But the other 90% or so struggled. So that's why I think we're at a pivotal moment. I think we have to ask ourselves a serious question about whether we want a system that continues to see further consolidation and the impact that that has on farmers and on rural communities, or whether we're innovative enough to figure out a new way, a different way, an expanded opportunity, so that when we have record income, it's shared not by a few, but by many and most. President Lincoln said this in the midst of another time of crisis and challenge. He said, "The dogmas of the quiet past are inadequate to the stormy present. The occasion is piled high with difficulty, and we must rise with the occasion. As our case is new, so we must think anew and act anew." I think this quote summarizes where we are as we look at this outlook for American agriculture and for the country. President Biden understands and appreciates that the strength of this great country is in its middle class, and he is committed to rebuilding that middle class, as he likes to say, from the bottom up and the middle out. So fortunately for us, in this pivotal moment, we have tools that we haven't had before, or we have tools that we are using in different ways. The Commodity Credit Corporation, the American Rescue Plan, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, the Inflation Reduction Act, is going to allow us to rise to the occasion, to think anew.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We have had a specific weather pattern of a triple dip line. We've had a triple dip La Nina. We've had 3 years of La Nina, which has a propensity to induce certain kinds of weather pattern in some key countries. And we've seen that.
Seth Meyer, Chief Economist, USDA.
We've seen the Australians have a record wheat crop 3 years in a row because of La Nina moisture as a contributor. We've seen dryness in Argentina and in Brazil, and one can attribute at least some of that to a La Nina weather pattern. At the same time, you see moisture in South Africa, La Nina weather pattern. We are pulling back from that. So we are removing some of these aspects or the influence of this in overall crops. Does it mean we won't have dryness in Argentina next year? Doesn't mean that. It just means the propensity changes.